Everybody, and welcome to the True Crime Squad. This is Katie Weaver. I'm here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Christy Brower. Hello.
Hello. Hey, everybody. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah. Valentine's Day Eve. Yes.
Yes, that too.
Happy post-Super Bowl. Happy Fat Tuesday, actually. I think I'm in the right place.
I think so. Happy Taylor Swift's boyfriend won some game. A couple days later. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All of the above, yes. Mm-hmm. And glad that you could join us. We missed our episode yesterday because Christy was just too busy gallivanting around airports to come and do an episode.
What can I say? Airport. So, you know, I added an extra 8 hours to my trip, and then we got partway home on a plane and rented a car to get the rest of the way home. So, yeah, I had like a 16-hour travel day yesterday, and it sucked.
Yeah, that super sucks.
But we had a fun trip, and I'm glad to be home. So,
well, I'm glad the trip was fun anyway.
It was. So at least that made up for it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot. There's a lot going down.
There is.
So let's get into it. You're going to kick us off with some creepy crime?
Oh, yes, I am. Y'all probably remember a while back over the Harvard morgue scandal, and it's part of the weird set of cases we've been reporting to you about, like the misuse of bodies after death, right? We've had many cases about that, and so there was this situation at Harvard University and the morgue there at the medical school where the man in charge of the morgue was, you know, just selling body parts as you do.
Apparently. And people were buying them as
apparently you do. I don't know. So it was horrific. We were all horrified together. Mm-hmm. This man's name is Cedric Lodge. And, you know, he is now charged with several crimes in the case. Mm-hmm. And so are some other people who were working with him in that situation. So then what happened is that some of the families who realized that their family's body parts were sold on the black market decided to sue Harvard, because this went on for a long period of time, multiple years. And, you know, the question was, how did you not know? How were you not taking better care of your morgue and, you know, more aware of your staff? Things such as that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, bad news. The judge in this case has decided to dismiss the family's lawsuits against Harvard.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that horrifying?
Why?
Well, Harvard doesn't really want to have to pay. It's just gross.
I don't like being held accountable.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently there's fear that criminals will run wild at every school, and they'll have carte blanche and, you know, stuff like that, which kind of goes a little far. Mm-hmm. But what is Harvard's responsibility here? You right. know, don't you think they have some responsibility? Because, you know, a lot of people feel that it was fairly well known that this man was doing this, and that there were other people involved, and that Harvard turned a blind eye to his behavior. So the family is really disappointed.
That's really problematic.
It's a group of families. It is. It's yeah. really problematic. And I mean, I think one of the things we've learned is how few laws there are out there that protect mm-hmm. people's remains and mm-hmm. what family has asked, or they have asked to what their wishes are with their remains, that there's not a lot out there in the world to protect that, you know?
Right. No, we've seen this so many times. I mean, hell, the case in Idaho, it took 2 years to bring any felony charges at all.
Right. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So the family say that they are going to appeal. And so we'll see if this holds up. But it does make you really wonder, like, how have things been so lax in this kind of arena, and why are they, and why aren't we holding people accountable? Because it's been difficult to charge the man here because Idaho laws were quite limiting. But it's a terrifying thought for all of us, I think. So anyway, gross. That's what's happening with Harvard at the moment. We'll see what happens with the appeal.
Okay.
So with that, I am going to kick the mic back to you for our main case.
Imagine being 12 years old, being asleep in your bed, and having two strange men barge into your bedroom, turn the light on, and start screaming at you to get up and get going.
Oh, terrifying.
People you don't know. And your parents standing back watching this happen and allowing it.
Yeah.
And those men drag you from your home, put you in a vehicle, drive you to an airport, put you on a plane, fly you to another state, you may not even know where you are, put you in a car, drive you clear out into the middle of nowhere, and deposit you in the wilderness at some kind of a camp. It's called Goonie.
Insane.
And it's just the process of basically legal kidnapping.
Yeah.
Well,
it's ancient.
Unfortunately, this happens quite a bit. There are quite a few of these teen behavior modification type camps. Teens in crisis have become quite a big business. And
sad,
kids
true.
That are coming to these camps frequently, these aren't the poors going to these camps. These are rich kids getting sent to these camps. The camp I'm going to talk to today is it's a 3-month program and it costs about $36,000.
Oh my God.
And again, they are taking children as young as 12 and maybe a little younger. You get sent to this camp, and for the next 3 months, you are an outdoorsman. You are basically camping and supposed to be getting therapy for whatever your issues are around a lot of other kids who are there for the same purpose. There's lots of punishments. There's lots of, you're in trouble frequently. You really have to toe the line. You are very limited on medical care. You are limited to eat whatever they're willing to give you. You do an enormous amount of hiking and manual labor. And this is considered therapy. This is a therapeutic situation. Unfortunately, it isn't always. No. Now, I will say some kids come out of these camps and say that it helped them a lot. Unfortunately, a lot of them come out of these camps and claim that they were abused, that they were injured, that they were sick, that they were neglected, and that they have a lifetime of PTSD and trauma from what happened to them at these camps.
I can't imagine. Just the stealing them out of their bed has got to be one of the most terrifying experiences of their lives. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so too. So such a camp is really under the microscope right now because of something that happened earlier this month. So we are talking about Trails Carolina. Let me tell you a little bit about Trails Carolina. Trails Carolina opened in 2008. It's non-sectarian. The premise of the camp is for family help and wellness. It is accredited by Outdoor Behavioral Health Care, Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities, Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges. They are licensed by the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. They take boys and girls from ages 10 to 17. The facility type is wilderness therapy. Average length of stay is 12 weeks. And again, they're in South Carolina or North Carolina. I can't remember what I said. North Carolina. Recently, a boy at 12 was jerked from his bed in New York taken to this camp. The very day he got there, according to staff, he was angry and belligerent when he got there. No shit, Sherlock. Who wouldn't be?
Right? Who wouldn't be?
He refused dinner. Did finally eat some snacks later. And then I'm going to pull up a series of slides here. These slides came from Unsilenced. Unsilenced is an organization that is committed to helping kids who have been victims of child abuse, particularly in institutionalized settings. Wow. You can check them out on Facebook, other social media. Their website is unsilenced.com. I think, let me double check that. .org, sorry. Unsilenced.org.
There you go.
So on February 3rd, police were called to the Trails Carolina facility after receiving a call that a 12-year-old was unresponsive. They got there and they found a kid that essentially was deceased. They actually did try to do some resuscitation, but he was in rigor at the time.
I've been dead quite a while.
Yeah. Law enforcement cited involuntary manslaughter on the subsequent warrant to get more information about what happened to this boy.
Mm-hmm.
The search warrant says that police attempted to gain information about the other four juveniles that were present when he died. And that Trails, he was in a bunk or a cabin with four other kids and two staff members who say they have no idea what happened.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Trails Carolina staff refused to allow police to speak with any juveniles on site as well as see them. They also refused to give out any of the juveniles' names or date of births or any other information. Transylvania, believe it or not, the county this is in is Transylvania.
Oh, my God.
A county department of social services attempted to check on the welfare of the children and were met with the same refusal by any and all Trails Carolina staff.
Yikes.
Due to the state in which the body was discovered, we'll get there, incohesive findings and the lack of cooperation from Trails Carolina, there was probable cause to indicate a further investigation was necessary. So that's what they are doing currently. A couple more things about Trails Carolina. This is from their website. Trails Carolina's wilderness camps for troubled teens are dedicated to helping teens work through behavioral or emotional difficulties, build trusting relationships with their family and peers, and achieve academic success. That's their mission statement.
That is a tall order.
Mm-hmm. This is an aerial of the camp.
Okay.
And a map. So, I want to get to I have so many windows open. Let me get to the.
Oh.
Let me get to the timeline. I have a good timeline here. Okay. The warrant. But when this first happened, there's very little information out. But now there's several things that have happened. One of the things that's happened is that the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services has sent a letter to Trails Carolina insisting that they do the following right now. Cease new admissions until they complete their investigation. Discontinue use of bivy bags for any purpose for all children or adults at the camp throughout the conclusion of all investigations in this matter. I'll tell you what bivy bags are in a minute.
Okay.
Require at least one staff member to remain awake while one or more children are asleep. God, I would think that was already required.
Yeah.
Staff who were in the cabin where the deceased resident were cannot return to the cabin or campsite at this time. Permit unlimited and announced access by local DSS staff, law enforcement, and health and or human resource. Good Lord. North Carolina Department of Health and for God's sake, you know what I'm talking about. Yes, thank you. That is a really long to the cabin, campsite staff, and clients. Provide by 10 a.m. each morning to Transylvania. Provide by 10 a.m. each morning to Transylvania County Department of Social Services a list of clients, their group assignment and location at Trails Carolina, and whether a restraint of any type was used against that child in the previous 24-hour reporting period.
Oh, boy.
A daily report.
A daily report. So has this got something to do with restraint then?
Thoroughly or the bivy bag? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thoroughly complete and update the incident report provided to us in accordance with the incident response and reporting materials. Provide DSS with the names and contact information for parents or guardians of all children at the camp, including their state and or country of residence.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that has been sent out. So here's what we know. So the boy had been at the camp less than 24 hours. He was 12. Mm. We're just going to call him CJ. So CJ refused to have dinner, was described by staff as being loud and irate when he arrived. Again, no shit.
Yeah.
He did finally eat some snacks later that evening. He stayed in a bunkhouse that is a square structure made out of wood with four other children, as well as two staff members. Their protocol dictates that he would have to sleep on the floor of the bunkhouse his first night. Yeah.
Wow.
Because, you know, everything is punitive.
In these programs, it is. Yeah.
The base layer on the ground is a heavy plastic sheet that is approximately 6 feet and tied on the end with a string. This is what the bivy bag thing is. On top is a sleeping bivy, which is a small tent. One side is collapsed, the other side is held up with a flex pole, and there's a sleeping bag inside of the bivy. On the zipper of the bivy is a small alarm that goes off when you exit. So that's what he was sleeping in.
Okay.
That whole thing was seized along with several other things. So counselors say that around midnight, he started to have a panic attack. The two counselors stood along the wall and witnessed the panic attack. They said
they witnessed it?
Yeah. They told detectives that he experienced panic and high anxiety, but didn't mention if they attempted to assist him. The counselor did mention to detectives that the boy could exit the bivy at any time, but when he described it to detectives, they kept saying, "We would open or close the bivy." So he couldn't exit without them opening it.
Mm-hmm.
They claim they checked him at 3 a.m. and he was fine. 6 a.m. he was fine. And at 7:45 a.m. he was cold to the touch and stiff.
I don't think that happens in an hour and 45 minutes.
It doesn't. This is when the police got there. They wanted to speak to the other kids that were in there, and they rushed them out of there and wouldn't let the police have anything to do with any of the other kids. Here's the thing. He was also naked from the waist down.
What?
He had on a hoodie and a t-shirt, and his pants and underwear were off of him and laying next to his shoulder.
What the hell?
He was also foaming at the mouth, which made them wonder if he was actually had been poisoned in some way.
Or had a seizure of some sort or maybe medical event.
Maybe it sounds like he was very, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
So, not sure on that.
Any child would be?
Yeah. So, the police are taking it very seriously. You know, they're not treating this lightly. But here's some other things about Trails Carolina that you should know. There are two current lawsuits against them for sexual assault.
Oh, my God.
So the new lawsuit, here's a few factual allegations from the court documents. Trails Carolina's negligent business model fosters abuse upon children and allows them to suffer neglect. Trails Carolina was negligent, reckless, and wanton in permitting Gertie's sexual abuse. This is the new lawsuit. Girl's name is Gertie. She's 20. She was taken here at 12 to work on anxiety.
Oh my God.
Depression. You sent your 12-year-old to a camp like this for depression?
Yeah, holy hell.
Staff and Gertie's therapist, Dario Kane, were alerted to another girl being sexually assaulted twice, yet failed to remove the perpetrator from Gertie's cohort. Apparently, there was a girl in their cabin that was really sexually inappropriate with some of the other girls. And they didn't like it. They were uncomfortable with it. So another girl, not Gertie, who was in that same cabin, had reported two times that this other girl had been sexually assaulting her. She was accused of manipulative behavior and was moved to a different cabin.
Oh my God.
So Gertie says on her 37th day there, she was sexually assaulted and disclosed it to Dario Kane, her counselor, who told her, made her promise not to tell anyone. No field staff, Dario Kane, or anyone else ever reported any of these sexual assaults to authorities. She also tried to send a letter to her parents to let them know this had happened, and they intercepted that, and her parents never received it, according to the lawsuit.
Wow.
So the old lawsuit, this is lawsuit number one, also regarding Gertie, ignored recommendations for her eating issues. She had some eating problems, and Trails Carolina didn't honor that at all. She said the water filter broke for 3 weeks, which led to them developing pinworms. Oh, they never, she never saw a doctor, but somebody gave her medication for pinworms.
Oh my God.
She was forced to hike all day, and given that exertion, didn't receive enough calories. Apparently she lost a ton of weight while she was here. Did not receive a shower until her 10th day on site.
Oh.
Suffered from a UTI, because, yeah, girls have to have showers.
Right.
Suffered from a UTI for weeks before finally being treated with antibiotics, despite never seeing a physician.
Oh, my God.
Had two staph infections on her arm, and again, never saw a physician.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. So these are the lawsuits with Gertie's family that are going on right now. Again, there are some people that have come out of Trails Carolina that say that it saved their lives and it was the best thing that ever happened to them. Unfortunately, though, right now people are coming out of the woodwork. I spent some time on Reddit today and read hundreds of accounts of people who were at this camp or another one, who as adults are still trying to deal with the physical and emotional trauma that they suffered, the PTSD that they are still suffering from the camps.
Yeah.
Why are people sending their kids to these places? Why? Why? And multiple people I have seen were sent there for either depression or anxiety. This is ridiculous. Not a solution.
No.
It's not.
A lot of kids get sent to these camps because parents have a tendency to think that the child's behavior is not their fault, or they want it to not be their fault. So then they will say that the entire problem is this kid and send them to something like this, rather than facing up to some problems maybe happening in the family unit. Mm-hmm. It's really sad and disgusting.
Unfortunately, Trails Carolina has received numerous citations by the state health department over the last 6 years.
Wow. And yet they're still licensed?
Are still licensed. They're still
being allowed to function with all of this going on?
They are still operating. Now, they say that the reason that they did not let the police access these kids was because of their protocols for getting the kids away from the death scene and trying to prevent them from experiencing trauma.
Give me a break.
And also protecting them until their parents gave permission for them to speak to the police.
But that they were protecting the kids from being protected by the police. The police were not looking so much, I don't think, for perpetration in this case. They were looking for, are the rest of the kids in this place okay?
Yeah. Here's the statement the Trails Carolina put out. Trails is aware of the contents of the search warrant, and we are saddened for the family to have these details made public.
Are you kidding me?
Maybe be sad. Oh, God. The search warrant document contains misleading statements. There are details we will not address at this time out of respect for the family and the investigation that is still underway. We can address the statement that Trails prevented children from speaking to investigators. Trails asked parents' permission for any children involved to speak with law enforcement and state regulatory agencies, and we complied with each parent's preference as we are required by law to do. Children were moved from the area to protect them from seeing what was happening, not to avoid investigators. We are a mental health facility treating children with severe, complex mental health diagnoses. Not moving children from the area would have harmed their mental well-being. Trails maintains there is no evidence of criminal conduct or suspicious acts based on all knowledge available to us and information and statements from other agencies. Trails and all related personnel have not been charged with any crimes. Knowing the truth about what caused the loss of this young boy's life is what matters, and we eagerly await the report by the chief medical examiner.
You mean the police who said this was an involuntary homicide from the very beginning? Mm-hmm. Those police, there yeah. certainly was an indication that wrongdoing had occurred.
They also wow. have released an earlier statement. Trails has conducted an internal investigation of this incident, and the Trails facility has been investigated by outside professionals who are subject matter experts. Both investigations have concluded that there is no evidence that Trails failed to properly supervise, no evidence that Trails caused harm, and no evidence that conditions at Trails were safe or unhealthy. Then why is there a dead child?
Right, yeah. Why? Sorry, but that's bullshit. You got a dead kid.
Utter bullshit.
And you are responsible for that child's life.
Absolutely.
I hate these programs. I think they're utter bullshit. Mm-hmm.
1,000%. But here's the thing. This isn't the first kid to die at this camp.
Are you kidding me? Mm-mm. Oh my God.
A few years ago, a 17-year-old boy disappeared from the camp. And initially was said that he must have run away. His name was Alec Lansing. So Alec Lansing walked away from the camp, supposedly, and was missing for a fair amount of time before he was found. His body was found in a stream. He was actually not very far from the campsite when he was found, but he was down kind of a steep slope or ravine. Apparently, according to investigators, it looked like he'd climbed a tree and fell from the tree a fairly far distance into the stream and fractured his hip and laid in the stream and died from hypothermia.
My God.
And what was, of course, said by Trails was that, well, he was a runaway. We thought he ran away. We couldn't find him. He wasn't very far.
To keep these kids safe, you dumbasses.
And he was laying in a stream. Yep, injured and dying from hypothermia.
Wow, that's horrifying.
But don't worry, they were fined $12,000.
Oh, well, that would make it all better then.
I mean, that's just a third of what his family paid for him to be there. So, sure.
Right.
Okay.
My God.
I was thinking about the... Ruby Frankie. Situation, mm-hmm. the Frankie family, because they sent their 14, I'm going to say, year old son to a mm-hmm. camp like this in Arizona, because he kept pranking his brothers and he needed to learn to grow up and show some responsibility. And he lived at a place like this for about 3 months.
Yeah, he did. And went through a huge amount of trauma, according to him.
Yep.
God.
So our hearts go out to CJ's family. I can't imagine Absolutely. For whatever reason that they felt like this was good. One thing I read from several people who sent their kids here and then really regretted it is that once they had made an inquiry to this place, mm-hmm. when they were at their wit's end with kids' behaviors or issues right. and were looking for solutions, is that they received an enormous amount of pressure.
Oh, I'll bet. It's like high pressure sales is what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. To
wild.
Send their kids there. And of course, some people have not regretted that, and some people have, and that's the way it is. A lot of the adults that were sent to these camps say that it absolutely destroyed their relationship with their parents, that they have no contact with their parents as adults. because
how could it not?
I mean, allowed this to happen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trust that's broken there, I cannot imagine.
Yep. Unbelievable. So obviously we're going to keep a close eye on this one and we will let you know at some point here, the autopsy results will come back and then will there be charges filed? We don't know.
Right.
We don't know. But obviously something went terribly, terribly wrong here.
Surely did. Surely did.
And the timing of what the staff are reporting versus the body being in rigor, I think, is really concerning. The fact that they claim that he was fully supervised is complete nonsense. Right. And I can't even imagine what his family's going through right now.
I can't either.
Thought that's this was a solution. Just... they thought it was safe.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks. So with that, I'm going to kick the mic back over to you for our, let's see, for a true crime update.
Yes. Well, you may have heard that there was a shooting at Joel Osteen's church just a couple of days ago.
Yes.
This is a fairly interesting and tragic case. This is the story of Janice Moreno. So this is Janice right here. And Janice used to attend this church. So this is a place that she's familiar with. Unfortunately, she's been causing problems at this church for months. And people have been trying to sound the alarm that this lady is not okay. Mm-hmm. Got some major stuff going on and is actually standing outside the church holding a gun and different things multiple times before the shooting occurred, which I just hate stories like that. Like, there are things that can be done to prevent these things. Mm-hmm. There are six women that live in this neighborhood in Conroe, Texas, which is north of Houston, who say that they were targeted, harassed, threatened by her, and that she displayed firearms and made them fear for being outside of their homes.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
Yeah, so it's really concerning, honestly. And I guess what I hate is that there's always a backstory to these things. And the backstory is always that some people knew.
Uh-huh.
Some people knew, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And some people have been asking for help and not getting it.
Yeah.
So she has a history of mental health issues, some abuse. She had a real contentious divorce.
Uh-huh.
And she's had a criminal history, including using multiple aliases. Now I'm going to clear something up right now because
please I'm so freaking do
tired of this shit. She has been known to use multiple aliases. One of them mm-hmm. is Jeffrey Escalante, mm-hmm. and because she's used multiple female and male names while committing crimes, the dumbassery of the world has blown up and said that this was committed by a trans person. She uh-huh. has never identified as anything but a female.
Yep.
An alias when you're committing a crime is not the same thing as right. changing your name because you're trans. And if you don't know that, you need to grow up.
Yeah.
That just drove me nuts that all of a sudden everything that's being said about the shooter.
That's all I'm seeing. The trans I thought Jennifer Coffendaffer. Yeah, oh, I saw Jennifer Coffendaffer call her a transvestite today.
Oh, for God's Twitter. Sake. First of all, that's a slur. Second of all,
a huge slur.
This is not true.
No. Crazy. So, yeah, problematic. Seriously.
Very much so.
Legally.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. But it turns out not trans, and please stop saying that. She has been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Child Protective Services has worked with her and her family, and that she is not supposed to be owning any guns because of that. Unfortunately, she did in fact have guns, and just really a long history of scary behavior and abuse toward her children and her spouse.
Really sad that she had that kid at all.
Right. With her. Very much so. Right.
Let alone going into it. Did you see the statement by Joel Osteen afterwards?
Yeah.
He smiled the whole time.
He's such a psychopath, you guys. I'm sorry.
God, but it was weird.
Weird, creepy, disconnected from the world smile. And that God protects Lakewood Church and blah, 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 blah. No, that's not what happened at all.
No.
It's terrifying. The look on his face is so bizarre. It's like I'm not even looking at a person. You know what I mean? Like there's something missing in there.
The interview I saw with him, I was astonished at the grin on his face the whole time he was talking about this shooting.
Yeah, I was too. It was really horrifying. I don't understand what that is about, but it certainly is terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, this whole situation. Very sad. It is.
It's very sad. But it's... Oh, it's another one of these cases that pisses me off because it's obviously been well known that she was a risk, that she was a risk to the church, that she was a risk to other people in her community, to her child.
Yeah.
And yet here she was with guns, able to commit the shooting. So
yeah. Well, and of course the people that she shot at, shot back and shot her kid in the head.
They did. Yeah. It's terrifying. The whole situation to show up. I mean, clearly, to show up at this church with weapons and her child in tow is very terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's an indicator of where she's at in her thinking. Mm-hmm. Not clearly at all. So we're going to continue to follow this case. I think it's really important. It's one more time that we have to evaluate this structure that we have that could help in these situations and how we stop getting to this point, how we stop letting people get to this point when we have assistance available and, you know. And also, Joel Osteen freaks me out, you guys. I'm curious to hear what y'all think. Maybe some of you like him. I don't know. I find him terrifying. But that smile on his face the whole time he talked was the most freaky, disingenuous thing I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Agree.
And that's what I've got. Right.
Well, there you have it. So there's all kinds of controversy for you. We will be back tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode, and we'll be back tomorrow night for case updates. So but we'll try and knock both of them out of the park tomorrow.
We'll do our best.
We're not going to do the watch party tomorrow night. We'll do it the following. Partly because it is Valentine's Day, and partly because technically I think it should be the next week. We're kind of on the cusp of whether we do it this week or next.
Yeah.
We're going to wait. So no watch party this week, but a brand new episode with lots of updates, case updates at 7 p.m. Mountain tomorrow night. So watch for two things from us tomorrow. We have some other cases, breaking cases that really need some attention too. So we'll get to those tomorrow.
You sure will.
So thank you guys so much for being here. Please take great care of yourselves. You are absolutely worth it. This has been yet another production of the True Crime Squad. Take care.
Bye, everybody.